Yes, guys, welcome to Off the Bench. We're looking ahead to game week 7 and looking back on the game week 6 just gone. I'm Janny, I'm from Fantasy Football Festival.
I'm Andy, also known as FPL Sonaldo from Fantasy Football Scout.
Coming up in today's show, we have got loads of talking points. We're going to be speaking about mid-price forwards. Do we get that third forward in our team? Tony, Mitrovic, Isaac, all on the radar. Haaland, perma-captain, we're going to be touching on that. Arsenal, what to do with their assets. Taking Newcastle seriously. Is Kane an option over Salah as that second premium in your teams? And of course, Andy, we have to talk about Man United. What a win it was for them on Sunday.
Yeah, it was quite an underwhelming week, Johnny, for most managers, especially for the highly owned players. With that being said, it's one of those weeks where, you know, patience is a virtue and you don't want to, you know, knee-jerk and react too much to the results. For me, myself, I had a very low scoring week, but I'm very excited for the next 2 weeks, followed by the international break. And as you mentioned, United are on the rise again and very interesting assets to look out for. What are your first initial thoughts on the United and Arsenal game, Johnny?
Yeah, I thought, firstly, what a game. Like, really enjoyed watching it. And I'm glad there was goals. It allowed us to really consider, are we going to start taking this United attack seriously? Because under Ten Hag, they've been pretty limited in their attacks. But they've been scraping through and we've seen a couple of 1-0 victories. But seeing them express themselves a little bit more against Arsenal and really go for it in that second half, I thought, hang on a minute. There's mid-priced assets here like Rashford that we probably need to start taking a little bit more seriously, especially if he's playing number 9. So Rashford, for one. Antony, of course, caught the eye early on. But even their defenders, keeping Arsenal to one goal is pretty useful and the likes of Dalot have looked good value. So I'm not sure if I'll be beelining for United straight away, but if I was on a wild card in the next couple of weeks, and I don't know if you are, Andy, over that international break, then I think United would be a team I look at and probably try and cover.
Yeah, I'm totally with you here, actually. Actually, if I was wild carding now or if I wasn't wild carding, I'd even consider bringing them in this game week because they do have two decent fixtures in 7 and 8. First of all, you know, shout out to Ten Hag because, you know, we know Ten Hag as a possession-based manager who likes to keep the ball, who likes to control the game. And we saw this in the first 2 or 3 games where they had high possession, right? I think 60-something percent, 70-something percent. The last few games, he's gone and reverted to a counter-attacking system where United have had less than 50% possession. So it just goes to show that he's a flexible manager, able to adapt. And Arsenal played right into his hands. Arsenal were very attacking. It looked like they were dominating. And yes, they were for a while. If the goal had counted initially, then, you know, game state plays a big role and the game would be very different. But the goal didn't count. And they kept defending. And when Arsenal was exposed, they, you know, got the goal off Rashford's counter. So I'm very excited about Antony. I think Antony is going to be someone we look at, as well as Rashford at a million cheaper than Antony as well. And as you mentioned, defense too. Dalot is someone we have to consider moving forward.
You make such a good point on the sort of counter-attacking style because we saw what Ten Hag, of course, wanted to do, play out from the back. And we saw what happened at Brentford with that. So it was nice and refreshing to see them start going long in the last couple of games. And when you go long and you don't have the ball as much, it really favours those fast forwards, right? And we look at that United front three that we think will be the front three moving forward. Antony one side, Sancho the other. And then if Rashford gets what he wants and gets to play in that number 9 role, in the games they're playing against good teams that will have the ball, like Arsenal, with a high defensive line, they'll look really good. My big question is, how will they perform against teams that sit deep and park the bus against weaker opposition? And we saw against Southampton, who actually do try and play with a high line. Even against the Saints, they struggled a little bit. They limped over the line with a 1-0 win. But when they go and play some more defensive teams, you know, I want to see Man United play Bournemouth. So yeah, that's something to consider. But I do think that there's definitely goals in this team. And I think Rashford's probably the standout because he's cheaper than Antony and Sancho, and playing a little bit more advanced. And he's still, of course, listed as a midfielder. At 6.5 million, I think if I'm going to go to a Man United attacker, he's the one you go for, right? Andy, would you feel the same?
I mean, you make some excellent points, Johnny. First of all, as you mentioned, they played the long ball. And, I'm very into statistics. So sometimes you can get too caught up in statistics. But if you look at De Gea's initial first few games, he was doing very few long ball passes, as in, you know, trying to get to the second line, to the forward line. But these last two games, he's, pretty much doubled his outlet in terms of long ball passes. So it just goes to show that, okay, De Gea is not a great passer of the ball, so might as well play to his strengths and use his saving ability. Yeah, I think Rashford is probably the standout pick just because of his price point. But the reason why I'm keen on Antony as well is United tend to play a lot from the left zone. So it's a good point you make. We have to see how they do against teams that sit back. But, you know, when United play, usually they attack from the left zone. So I think this game there was like 40-something percent from the left side, which leaves Antony on an island on the right. So I want to see how he does, because I think Antony and Rashford, that combination on top of Dalot on the right, can become, you know, very deadly moving forward.
Yeah, let's look at Arsenal as well then, because I still think they were impressive. Like, when the game went to 1-1, I thought it was Arsenal that were going to win it in that last 25 minutes. I'm guessing you've got three Arsenal assets at the moment, Andy?
Yes, I do. Yes, yeah. I do.
So me too. And look, they've served us well, served us really well, especially the attackers, the midfielders and Jesus. I look at the fixtures, Everton and Brentford, next two, fine. But come game week 9, which is when a lot of managers are looking to wildcard, it goes Spurs, Liverpool, Leeds, City. Are you looking to keep your Arsenal assets? And if so, how many of them and which ones? Because I think Martinelli is going to be a long-term hold for me, because the value we've got in Martinelli, he's been so, so good. Jesus, I'd like to think I will keep. But again, if Mitrovic is knocking on the door still, or if there's a couple of new forwards we need to consider, he might be the first to go. And then the Arsenal defenders are the ones I think we probably can look to move on. What's your take, Andy?
Yeah, it's rough. Tripling up on Arsenal was a mixed bag, right? I think you had some good results here and some bad results there. But the next two game weeks, I'm happy to keep all three of them because they do have solid fixtures. But as you mentioned, Gianni, from 9, you know, the fixtures get tough. So I think it might be time to move on from Jesus because of the, you know, other outstanding striker options coming up, such as Mitrovic, Tony, as well as Isaac from Newcastle. So I think I'll be moving off Jesus, but as you mentioned, Martinelli is a long-term keep for me. He could have got a goal. He looks like the danger man. He looks like the guy that Arsenal wants to pass to on the counter, as well as, you know, behind the line. So moving forward, I'm probably just going to have Martinelli and move off Ramsdale as well as Jesus.
Yeah, I've got Zinchenko, and we haven't seen him really go for it in attack yet, and we haven't seen him play midfield yet, but I'm tempted to keep him, knowing I'm sure those assists are going to come. I'm so impressed with Arsenal's summer business, and I just think Zinchenko and Jesus, two players that the manager, of course, knows really well from his time at City, and he's got two City players, two City-level players, champions, and I think they're both going to be really instrumental in Arsenal having a very good season. I also love the fact Arsenal don't have Champions League football. We're about to hit so much fixture congestion. And sure, Arsenal have a ton of fixtures too, because they're playing in Europe, but they're not playing in the Champions League, which makes me think, for the group stages of the Europa at least, we're going to see a lot of that first team that we're seeing in the Premier League week in, week out. And it's not changing much, that 11. We're going to see them rested sometimes midweek, unlike the teams that are playing in the Champions League that will, of course, want to go full strength in both competitions. So I do like the fact that the likes of Zinchenko and even your Martinellis might get a little bit of a rest midweek. So come Premier League action, they're still going to go full strength. So I'm really cautious about selling Arsenal assets, even on a wild card, if I do go there early. But I must admit, I'm not looking at playing the wild card quite just yet. Are you planning it around that sort of international break, Andy? I know a huge amount of the FPL community are. I personally don't think I'll be pulling the trigger then. I think I'll be holding a little bit longer. But I do have that third attacker spot covered. And I think a lot of people perhaps wildcarding to try and move funds from a heavy back line to be able to go third striker, Mitrovic or Tony. I'm on Tony already, so I perhaps don't need to make that move.
Yeah, that's a great point you make. I think one of the reasons why managers are keen to wildcard right now is because a structural difference. A lot of us are heavy in the back. A lot of us have that 8.0 midfield option, which there's still good options there, but we want to get three strikers because the strikers are the ones that haul. There's a lot of good striker options right now available coupled with the fixtures. So, I do agree with you. I'm very interested to hear why you're wildcarding later. I actually knee-jerked almost into a wildcard this week after a bad week, but I'm being patient with it. And I know game week 9 is probably the latest I'll go before I wildcard, considering 8 as well, but most likely 9. How about yourself?
Yeah, I completely get why people are aiming for sort of 8-9 the international break. There's a little bit of a fixture swing, but you know, we're talking about good fixtures for teams like Leicester and Fulham. Do we really want to go big on their assets? You know, a lot of us have got Andreas already at Fulham. We can probably get to Mitrovic in one move anyway. I'm also hesitant selling good players from teams like Arsenal. But also, I like the allocation of my funds at the moment. And I think I set up a little bit differently pre-season. Going into game week one, I didn't go for the really big at the back strategy. And therefore, I've got more funds in my attack than most. And I do think a lot of people are looking at the wild card to get that third striker spot. And I've been on Tony for the last couple of weeks. So I've got Haaland, Jesus, Tony. And sure, I want Mitrovic, but I can go Mitrovic in for a Tony or a Jesus in one simple, very easy move. Yeah. So with that in mind, I just don't look at my team and think it needs to wildcard. Therefore, I'm not planning one. I don't want to book one in. But I do think the wildcard is so individual. It's so personal. And whenever it works for your team, for those that have already wildcarded, many for the right reason, you go when works for your team. But if we're looking at that really sort of templatey team, it's big at the back. And therefore, I can see why you want to go a little bit lighter. Because you look at the weekend just gone, and we saw the same a couple of weeks ago. Not all these premium defenders are delivering. You know, you look at the likes of Robertson, even Trent, he's had one amazing week. Yep. Cancelo's returns have been modest, even with his goal. So you look at that and go, yeah, I could get a Tony or Mitrovic that seems to be scoring goals every week. So I think, is that part of your thinking, Andy, that third forward spot?
I mean, first of all, you know, good on you, because I think you're probably 2 or 3 weeks early on Tony. I think all of us will, you know, possibly own him by game week 9. Tony is just one of those players that's the talisman, you know, unstoppable on penalties and continues to tick along. Even last season, there was a time where he wasn't returning, I think early on, and then, you know, a lot of managers hopped off him. But by the end of the season, he racked up a ton of points. So I think Tony is a good option to have long-term until the World Cup. And if you couple that with Mitrovic and Haaland, I mean, that's an exceptional front three moving forward. So yeah. I get why you're holding off on the wild card, because a lot of people are trying to get to where you are right now, Johnny.
Yeah, like Tony and Mitrovic, it's this mid-price forward bracket. They are so reliable at the moment. And Tony blanked in the last two before his hat-trick this weekend. But even in his blanks, he was getting the chances. I think he hit the woodwork against Everton, yep. Had a really high XG in those two games with his modest returns. And I was like, no, as long as he's getting the chances, that's all I want to see from forwards, especially at that mid-price bracket. Even when they're not scoring goals, if their XG is high and if they're getting the chances, you have to keep the faith. And I've been super impressed by the attacks of the teams they play for. So you look at Fulham attack and you think every given week, no matter who they play, they're going to score goals. Mitrovic now, I think he got brace against Liverpool on the opening day. He scored against Arsenal, good defence. Scored against Brighton, good defence. He went away to Spurs and scored, another good defence. This is a guy that just scores every time he plays, or it looks like he's going to. And Brentford the same. Like, no matter who they're playing, they look like they're going to score a couple of goals. And therefore, you want their leading number nines. They don't have midweek fixtures all the time because they're not in Europe. So again, these guys both have got a bit of a point to prove. Mitrovic, been written off in the past, can't do it in the Premier League. Well, yeah, he can. He's proving us all wrong there. And Tony, he's playing for, well, I mean, he's been linked with a late call up to the World Cup. If he carries on scoring goals at this level, there'll be a bit of pressure under Southgate to pick a slightly different number nine, a nice plan B option. Saying that, Southgate's very loyal to the players he's already picked. We know he has his favourites. So it's probably unlikely Tony goes. But of course, he'll think he's got a chance. And therefore, what more motivation do you need than playing for to be selected for a World Cup?
Yeah, I think I just want to bounce off those two players. We're dragging on here about those two players, but that's how good they are, right? Yeah. And Mitrovic on the weekend against Spurs really played exceptional football this game. I think the best game of the season so far. And, you know, they were dominating pretty much the entire game, and Mitrovic got probably two big chances. And the second one was a goal, but his goal was just such a tidy, you know, curler into the corner type of finish, a striker's finish. And Tony as well, his third goal for a hat trick was a chip, right, after he went around the defender. So I think those things are stuff you don't see in FPL, where it's like a confidence thing, right? A striker really does well when they're confident. They want the ball to their feet. They want every chance. And you want that in FPL. You want to be getting points through your FPL players. And when your strikers are confident, there's no better formula, to say the least.
Yeah, so true. That Fulham attack looks good. I look at managers, I don't know about you, Andy, and go, Marco Silva, we know what he did in previous clubs against Watford, always had a go. And you just knew this season coming up to the Premier League, these newly promoted teams, those that can score goals have got a chance. And look, Bournemouth and Forest, they've scored a few goals too. But I look at that Fulham attack and just think, even with the likes of Wilson out injured, who was going to provide a lot of the ammunition to Mitrovic, they brought in a player like Andreas Pereira that seems to be linking really well with him. And they're a team I feel like I can trust, even against Spurs away, that I can trust them to score against Liverpool with the brace. So yeah, Mitrovic, I think, is a player we'll all be beelining for. The fixtures are turning for Fulham. And even, as I said, with the bad fixtures, you don't need to worry too much about them. Just looking at the next five coming up, it is Chelsea this weekend, but then they have Forest, Newcastle, West Ham, Bournemouth. You know, I'd consider captaining a player like Mitrovic in a fixture like Bournemouth at Craven Cottage. Is that good? And obviously, he's playing alongside Andreas Pereira, which for me is the standout budget mid in the game. And everyone should have Andreas Pereira at 4.5, right?
Yep, for sure. I have no doubt about it. I think very attacking, very cheap, and just one of those enablers you can have long-term and not think about moving on. So I do agree with you fully on Fulham, and I'm very excited to own Mitrovic moving into, I think, game week 8 or 9, possibly.
Yeah, I think I'm the same. And I planned Tony to Mitrovic, but as always with FPL, you have your planner and you think, okay, Tony to Mitrovic, same sort of price, one move. And then Tony goes and scores a hat-trick and you go, no, I bought Tony for a reason. I want both these guys. And it might just be someone like Gabby Jesus that has to drop out.
Yeah, Johnny, I was going to suggest, why don't you just move off Jesus? Are you still keen on him delivering, or are you just not keen on doubling up on Tony and Mitrovic?
Yeah, I'd love to Tony Mitro double with Haaland. I think that front three is an impressive one and what a lot of wildcarders will go towards. But I still really like that Arsenal attack, Andy. And I know Jesus has had that one really big game week and then a couple of sort of fairly low, modest ones.
Yeah, but I like, yeah, that's how I feel.
Yeah. But he is still getting the chances. And I do like his link with Martinelli. And knowing I'm going to own Martinelli long term, I'm pretty sure I'm going to own Martinelli long term. I like those two, that if one scores, the other gets the assist, and having both is a bit of a differential in itself, or could become one. And those two Brazilians, the two Gabbies, are linking up very, very well. So yeah, it's a hard one. It'll be one I guess I judge with another week or two's worth of eye test and another couple of weeks worth of data to decide on that. It might be that if I'm keeping Zinchenko and Martinelli, I get rid of Jesus. But if I'm selling Zinchenko, maybe I keep him and I'm happy with a double, not a triple up. We'll see.
Yep.
So often we look at our plans ahead and it changes till the week, doesn't it? Because you get different nuggets of information that just make you sort of tweak your forward planning.
No, totally agree.
We should talk a little bit about Newcastle, Andy, because they're a team that I'm super impressed with. Like, we're talking about Fulham and Brentford attack and a couple of teams that perhaps have gone under the radar, but no one's gone under the radar more for me than Newcastle. Sure, the attack's not been amazing and it's hard to identify what FPL asset you cover in attack, but in defence, good options. I mean, Pope and Trips, really nice options. Do you own any Newcastle players? I bought Trippier in this week and it's the first time I've invested in Newcastle season. I'm thinking I should be looking at two Newcastle assets with the fixtures they've got coming.
No wonder you had a good week. You had Trippier as well as Tony. Very jealous of that. I agree with you, Gianni. I think Newcastle is a top 10, top 8 team in the league this season. We should definitely not be ignoring their assets. They're about to get a very, very solid run of fixtures all the way to the World Cup. So it's almost like you can get them in and then forget about them. Trippier is the outstanding pick for me, just because you want to wing back in that defense. Look, their XG conceded so far isn't the best, but at the same time, they've had tough fixtures so far. So I think moving forward, their defense is only going to get better. Plus, you got that set piece monster in Trippier as well. And Pope is the one to get on a wild card in terms of keepers. So for me, I would love to get Ramsdale out for Pope, but it's a luxury move in my opinion. So on the wild card, I'm very keen on Pope as well. But how about yourself? Are there any Newcastle assets, especially the attacking assets, that you might be interested in?
Yeah, there's a bit of a spread of points with the attacking assets, isn't there? I mean, I've always been a big Callum Wilson fan in FPL. I like players like Wilson that have linked up with a manager they've worked with before. And you just know that Eddie Howe, when he brought Wilson in or started working with Wilson straight away, it was going to be a very good match. The problem with Wilson, as we all know, of course, is injuries. But then Isak's come in and obviously looked very, very sharp. I'm looking forward to seeing if there's a bit of an experiment there where they go to a front two and play both. Spending all that money on Isak and knowing how much Wilson is a favourite of Eddie Howe's, I wonder if we'll see a front two. And that could be really, really fun. But I must admit, the other attackers, even the midfielders like St. Max, again, we often question his injury record. I'm not too sure I'm willing to invest there, but I am thinking potentially double Newcastle defence. And look, I own Trippier. I say defence, it'd be covering the back line, looking at maybe complementing Trippier with a Pope, because you just said it, Andy. I mean, I think Pope is probably the standout player in the game at the moment. When we look at Newcastle for clean sheets, well, they've been keeping them. They've kept 3 clean sheets in 6, which feels like as good as anyone else. And Pope just makes so many saves. We saw it at Burnley. What we saw at the weekend against Palace in that 0-0 fixture was tons of shots against Pope. I think he made 9 saves, but a lot of those saves were from low XG chances, which can't be a coincidence. Newcastle are encouraging shots from range. Brilliant. Pope can save most of those. Shots from angles. Again, Pope can save loads of those. So they're defending well in central areas. They're pushing players either wide or they're encouraging shots from distance. And if we get that, and at times, by pure coincidence, we saw this at Burnley with Pope a couple of seasons ago when he was in everyone's team. He was getting loads of save points, not just because he's one of the best shot stoppers in the league, but because the team he plays for, the back line in front of him, encourages low XG chances, which, yeah, accumulates to quite a high number over the course of the game. A lot of those individual chances are quite low, and I really like that with Nick Pope. I also just think Newcastle are a very good defensive unit to keep clean sheets before we look at save points and before we look at bonus. You know, he just got 12 points at the weekend.
Yeah,
I've not had 12 points from my goalkeepers all season. You know, I had Ward, and then I've got Meslier. Spending 4.5 on these really inconsistent assets with very low ceilings, when you can go get Pope, get a 12-pointer 1 week, yeah, I think that might sound like a luxury transfer, transferring your goalkeepers. But for me, I mean, if you've got Ramsdale, maybe it is a bit of a luxury because, you know, also a good option. But although I've only been on Meslier a few weeks, I'm already thinking, how can I upgrade into Pope very soon?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. And I didn't realize it was coming from low XG chances. So it just goes to show that not only does he have a very high chance of getting a clean sheet, he's also going to be a bonus monster. So I think at 5.1 now, I believe, it's a no-brainer if you're on a wild card to go to Pope. The double up scares me, certainly, because I've been burnt by it all season. Granted, I think a general rule in FPL is to, you know, assess the players individually and not so much whether you're doubling up, tripling up. But, you know, it's easier said than done. And once a goal happens, then, you know, basically 2 players are out of the running and you're in the week unless, you know, they're going to get an attacking return. So I'm not so sure about the double up, but certainly if you look at individual players, Pope stands out, as well as Trippier moving forward. So we'll see where we get to in game week 9.
Yeah, West Ham, Bournemouth, Fulham, Brentford are the next 4 for Newcastle. So again, like if I'm looking at that double up, it's like, oh, I need to do it fairly soon because I want to be on them for Bournemouth and Fulham and Brentford. But again, I don't know if I've got enough moves in me. And I'm as I said, I'm not willing to wildcard just to change a goalkeeper and 1 or 2 others. You said you've been stung before from the double up. I'm guessing that's double Liverpool defence or double Man City defence?
Double Chelsea defence. And
Double Chelsea, of course it is. Have you had Cucurella and
James
Reece?
Yep.
Yeah.
And now it's time to move on from Cucurella. I've had my fair share of pain with him. And I know Chilwell, obviously, I mean, let's move on to Chelsea, I guess. And you know, Chilwell was excellent. He's back in the fold. And he's probably one of the most underrated, not underrated, but one of the best wingbacks in world football. And it's very unfortunate what happened to him last season, but he's going to be making a push into the World Cup. So I'm not sure about Cucurella's minutes anymore. If he does play, he's probably going to play left center back to cater to Chilwell on the left. So it'd be very interesting what they do, but Chelsea just kind of shambolic. I know it's your team in terms of defense, so I'm not so keen on the double up. Plus their fixture in 8 is not great. So yeah, I think James is still a keep because he can haul at any moment in time. Do you have James, Johnny?
I don't. And he's a player, you know, when you look at your team, there's always that one player you're really keen to have every single week, yet he's the one player you don't ever seem to be bringing in every week. I've been a bit like that with Reece James this season. And I think one reason why I've probably not moved mad to get him is the lack of clean sheet points. When we're spending a lot of money on a premium defender, sure, we're going there for the upside often. When you buy Trent or Cancelo or Reece James or Robertson, you're not just buying them for clean sheets. You think you're going to get goals and assists, and we often do. But you need to know that there's some sort of reliability with the clean sheet. And at the moment with Chelsea, a bit like with Liverpool, there isn't that reliability of clean sheets every other game. Chelsea have kept 1 clean sheet in 6. So therefore, I haven't beeline for Reece. I was also worried that he was going to play right centre back too much. Now Fofana's in, we'll know we'll see him at right wing back. And I do think this is a player I'll own in the next few weeks. And hopefully my timing with him is really good. But I'm with you, like, Reece James is still a very good option. But knowing Chilwell did so well in his 10-minute cameo, and what a goal that was, by the way. And he is an elite wing back. He's an out-and-out wing back. He's not great in a back four, and he's not great defensively. But as long as Tuchel's playing the wing-back system, he's like Alonso from years gone by. He pops up in the box. He's like a wide forward. Then Chilwell over Cucurella all day long. Yeah, Cucurella might play left centre-back a lot, but we're not going to see tons of attacking returns there. We'll see a few six-pointers. Chilwell is such a fun pick. Now he looks to be hopefully back fit. We need to see him starting another couple of games till we can perhaps commit to him being a back in the 11 full time. But yeah, what a fun pick. And I think if you own Chilwell or Reece, you're going to have a little bit of fun with them as long as they're playing wing backs.
Yeah, I mean, some of my best FPL memories from last season was the double up on Chilwell and James. I think just to summarize the wing back situation or defensive situation at Chelsea, I think that I would have James. I would consider having Fofana as my 4.4 sort of enabler just because he's so cheap.
Yeah.
And he's part of the Chelsea defense. You know what? It doesn't get better than that. But I would wait on Chilwell and just see how it plays out, see how the minutes in Europe kind of caters to him. And if they both play Cucurella and Chilwell, and it seems like Chilwell is going to get enough minutes in the league, then you should definitely consider him as a very outstanding option for your FPL team.
Yeah. So double Chelsea defence has stung you. I've seen a lot of teams stung by double City defence this season and double Liverpool defence. We saw a lot with Walker Cancelo. We saw a lot with Robertson and Trent. To anyone that's on those double up still, do you keep the faith or do you move on? Because I was pleased to see a lot sell Robertson at the right time, knowing Simicast came in and got the start as well. I think it's time to go down to single Liverpool and possibly even single City defence. Are you with me on that? Or do you think there's still a little bit of time in one of those sets?
I think you'll probably have to deal with other fires in your team. And, you know, if you're a Robertson owner, it's certainly annoying, right? Because he's such a great player, but he's just not the same FPL Robbo that we know from the second half of last season. With Wolves coming up, the chance of a clean sheet is very, very high. I mean, Wolves are probably one of the worst attacking teams in the league. And if they do nick a goal, they'll defend again and you'll have Robertson attacking output. But for me, I would keep for one more week and then maybe move him on in game week 8, where they do play Chelsea. And then the fixtures get tough from game week 9. But, you know, it's tough. I would be very frustrated as a Robertson owner myself.
Yeah, me too. Andy, I can't believe we've been talking for half an hour and we haven't spoken about... I mean, your Twitter handle is FPL Sonaldo. We know you're a big fan. We haven't spoken about premiums. And with that, Son has to form part of this conversation. No. So most teams are set up with two premiums. Haaland with one, right? Moving forward, who are we going to be picking? Is it still going to be Haaland with Salah? Or do we consider a Haaland with a Son or a Haaland even with a Kane? The problem there is you're taking up two of your valuable forward spots for all those great mid-price forwards. You can only have one. So what are you thinking when you do wildcard or even before that? Are you thinking there's ways, because I saw your tweet about Son. He looked very good at the weekend despite not scoring.
Yep.
When he does start scoring, we know he's one of these players that goes on unbelievable runs. The average position map at the weekend, he was more advanced than Kane, which is exactly what we want to see and what we saw last season. Are you looking at him?
Yeah, beautiful transition there. I appreciate that. You know, one of the reasons why I began playing FPL or getting really into FPL is because of Son. And, you know, out here in Korea, FPL is still not so recognized and so big. And I really hope that players like Son keep giving exposure for the Premier League out here and people realize how amazing this game of Fantasy Premier League is. So first of all, shout out to all FPL players in Korea. For me, I'm very interested in moving Salah off in game week 8, Johnny, and getting Son in for game week 8 because Salah plays Chelsea and he's been not performing at the 13.0 million price tag. Same with Son, but as you mentioned, this weekend game showed me all the signs of him potentially just, you know, exploding. And he could have easily had 3 goals and 2 assists or, you know, 2 goals, 2 assists, something like that. And one of the reasons why I thought Spurs did really well is because Lenglet was excellent coming into the fold, as well as Romero is such an important piece of Spurs. I mean, the buildup is so weak in the midfield that they need these two guys to be able to build up with them from the back. And yeah. Romero takes pressure off the left side. It's very interesting how football works, because you think that, you know, Sun's only dealing with Lenglet and, you know, Perisic and Sessegnon on the left. But if Romero and Richarlison do well on the right, it takes pressure off the left as well. So as a team, they need, you know, the right pieces and all the different parts of the formation, right? And one thing I will say is this. When they played Fulham, they played against a four-back, which caters to Conte's wing-back system. But Conte really struggled this season so far against teams with three at the back, essentially five at the back, because they'll just man mark everyone out of the game.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a key thing to see, which is why I think Man City, if you're going to hop on Son, he's a good option to have this game week, believe it or not. Look, he's not going to haul, but Man City is the perfect team for a player like Son to expose in the back. And I will say this with great caution, because they could also get dominated. But yeah, what your thoughts on moving off Salah to Son?
Oh, I don't think that's a move I'll be looking for. I think I need to see goals first, but I don't study Sun like you, and I really appreciate those thoughts. And it's really, really, really interesting to look at that dynamic at Spurs and how they play against that four or that five, because the game they really struggled in this season, despite getting the draw, I was at Stamford Bridge for it, was Spurs-Chelsea, and obviously they matched each other up. And when they did that, Chelsea were the better team all over until the last minute with the Kane header got them to 2-2, and fair play, Spurs got the result on that day. They got the point, but they were second best in every department
for sure
facing that system. Fortunately, it's usually going to be a back four they play, because that's what most teams play within the Premier League. But moving off Salah is an interesting one. It's something I'm looking at possibly doing. I just don't think it will be for a straight swap. It might be to move some funds around. It could even be to get Kane. It could be to go short term on KDB, so you get the KDB Haaland double up short term. The chances of me selling Salah in reality, though, knowing I've got a few other desired moves to go to and I'm not looking to wildcard, probably are quite slim. But I look at the fixtures from game week 8 for Liverpool, and let's just take four fixtures from game week 8. Actually, no, let's do five. It's Chelsea, really tough. Then Brighton, not easy. Arsenal, City, West Ham. Like, that's a really tough fixture run. You might just identify and go, I could go without Salah for a few weeks. Now, in normal seasons, you jump off Salah for 5 weeks. One, he scores goals against all the good teams anyway, so you shouldn't just look at fixtures with Salah. But two, you've usually got loads of money invested in Salah. So you don't want to sell him, because to buy him back, you've got to spend way more money. This year's a little bit different. Salah started the season at 13.0. He's still at 13.0, and it looks like he'll drop to 12.9 before he rises to 13.1. So you haven't got to worry about your team value if you do drop off him and want to come back on. So it's an interesting one. I also think this season, Salah is a little bit wider, and we've seen a lot of talk of this, but Darwin Nunez, when he does play number 9, occupies a lot of those central spaces, unlike when Bobby or Jota used to play 9, they would drop deeper, more false 9s. Well, Darwin's an out-and-out 9, and that pushes Salah a bit wider. So we're seeing Salah turn into creator a lot of the time. So sure, the assist points might be on the up, but the goal points could be on the decline. So definitely one to monitor when we see Darwin in the team long-term. And we haven't seen that because he got a red card. He's only just come back. So I'm really interested to see how that dynamic works with Salah-Darwin. If it looks like it's only really favouring Darwin and he's playing very well and Salah isn't getting the returns, but you've just got a bit of penalty appeal, it might be that I drop off Salah and actually go save myself 3-4 million and even have a punt on Darwin to cover that Liverpool attack still. But yeah, brave move to consider going off Salah this early, Andy, because he still finds a way of getting points, doesn't he? I mean, it was only in the last game week before the weekend just gone, I think it was game week 5, he got a 10-pointer without a shot, and I think he had one assist off his shoulder in the last second of the game, which turned into a 5-point assist. He got the 2 bonus with it. He just has a way of clocking up the points, doesn't he?
Yeah, it is a move that you need to, you know, consider a lot, because I do agree with you. FPL, the narratives are scary, right? You know, in the 9-0 Liverpool win, for example, if Salah was involved in, let's say, 2 or 3 or 4 of the goals, it'd be a different story. We wouldn't be having this conversation possibly, right?
Yeah.
But I see an opportunity here where in game week 8, Liverpool plays Chelsea, where, you know, Spurs have a good fixture. So maybe this is just 1 week punt before my wild card in game week 9, which is why it's possible, because I do have that wild card. If you're going to hop off Salah for a long term without a wild card strategy, you should always have a move back to him because he could start, you know, exploding at any point. And I like the fact that you mentioned that he hasn't risen in price yet, which is why it's easier to get back to him. Granted, you have to, you know, have money in the bank to be able to do that. So difficult, but I want to ask you, you mentioned Darwin, Johnny. Do you think Darwin really becomes a key component of FPL teams moving forward?
I feel like he might. I went there really early in the season, Andy. I bought him in, I think it was game week 3, just before he got sent off the week I bought him in. And it was his first start. So my timing felt good. Right? We'd seen two really good cameos and I went there and he got the start. He hit the post, missed a big chance, then got sent off. It was the worst thing ever. But I would liked what I saw. I really liked what I saw. And yeah. I questioned, was it because he was coming on as an impact sub? Against tired legs, especially at the start of the season, you come on for the last 20, you're fresh, everyone else isn't. You've got a big advantage. But even in the Merseyside derby at the weekend in which he started, I was impressed.
Yeah, very impressed.
I know he didn't score. He was getting the chances. That sort of half volley with his side onto goal from 18 yards. Pickford, I think, teed up onto the bar. What a hit that was. I just think he's going to be a mainstay in this team as the number 9, sure. But I think he's going to get lots of goals. And at the moment, his price is low. When you're the main man at Liverpool, the main man at City, you expect them to be your 12, your 13 million assets. Well, Darwin isn't. You know, he's just sub 9, I think. So with that in mind, he's someone I'm really keeping a close eye on. Probably not just yet. But I like the fact that when you have a wildcard strategy, you can dead end to a wildcard. So exactly. As you said, Andy, that's the beauty of knowing when you're going to wildcard. And you do, and I don't at the moment. It means you can have a couple of fun short-term one-week punts. Knowing you're wildcarding in 2 weeks' time, you can go some for a week. I like that. That's a big positive to booking in that wild card. And I guess that plays a big part of your thinking with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Spot on.
Any other players you're looking at sort of short term? I mean, you're not going to go take 8-point hits before a wild card, but are there any others you've sort of thought, oh, I can go on them for a week or two?
It's tough. I mean, the only option I have in terms of my team structure, by the way, if you don't know what my team looks like, I have a lot of money in the back, basically heavily invested in a back five. Hence, I can't get to the McAllister of this week and sort of those fun Zaha type players at the 6-7 million price point midfield. Yeah. You know, I could get a striker in, but that would take two moves. I only have one free transfer. So essentially I could roll this week or get to someone like a Trippier and sort of take a punt on him. I'm actually very keen on Dalot, Johnny, believe it or not. I think he could be a potentially, you know, sort of Hall type of player in the next two game weeks. I say this with caution, but I feel like he might be a fun punt to go for. And I like how you mentioned, if I have a wildcard strategy, I can have some fun with it. And that's exactly what I plan to do for the next two game weeks. How about yourself?
Yeah, I think I'm still, every player I bring in, I'm looking, as always, at the sort of next 3 to 5 game weeks to think I'm probably going to own them for 3 weeks, could be up to 5 weeks, knowing I don't quite know when I'm wildcarding. I have thought, if I don't use a wildcard in the next few weeks, I might, and obviously, look, guys, if you're not fully aware, we're going to get unlimited transfers during the World Cup. We need to use a wildcard before 16 because effectively we've got an extra one this year with the unlimited transfers chip. So I'm thinking, I might even carry it all the way through to game week 13, 14 and go, I'm going to have 2 weeks or maybe 3 weeks with effectively a brand new shiny team. Like, it's almost like a 2 week free hit if you wildcard in game week 14, for example. Yep. So you pick a couple of really fun picks knowing they've got two good fixtures. Off the top of my head, without looking at the fixtures, I remember thinking, oh, Salah has a couple of tricky fixtures just before the World Cup, yet KDB has a couple of really nice ones. So it could be that I don't wildcard till far, far later down, sort of game week 14. But if the fires come earlier, then sure, I pull the trigger early. But because I've got funds in the right places, just doesn't look like my team quite yet needs that wildcard. I guess we should move our attention onto captaincy though, Andy, because I know we've only got 5 minutes or so left and it's a really interesting one this year, isn't it? There's been so many that have obviously stayed loyal to Salah and he hasn't really been pulling up trees the last few weeks. Yet those that have gone Haaland for the back-to-back hat-tricks, even again on the weekend just gone, big points again with his 9. Is Haaland becoming a bit of a perma-captain or are we still, of course, always going to play the fixtures?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, it's easy to say that Haaland's a perma-captain, but when Salah has Wolves, for example, and Haaland has Tottenham, it's not easy to ignore. Most likely Salah is going to be the highly owned captain this week. And I'm probably leaning there as well, even though we haven't seen enough from Salah to justify his price tag this season so far. But he's got a history. He's probably one of the best or greatest FPL players of all time. So we just have to trust that it'll come and sort of play the fixture this game week. But it is very interesting. I think Haaland is too hard to ignore. For managers that may have gone Salah over Haaland in the last two game weeks, I know it's a bit unfortunate, but you shouldn't be too hard on yourself, because while Haaland captainers gained some advantage, the point spread between the two players isn't that great, because Salah obviously is a midfielder with, you know, more routes to points versus Haaland is, you know, he has to score a lot to really haul. So I wouldn't be too worried about missing the boat in the last 2 weeks. It's just what we do moving forward. And this week, I think the straightforward answer is Salah. Yeah. How about yourself?
Yeah, I think I'm the same. And it is just a classic case of playing the fixture. I don't think Pep probably wanted to give Haaland 90 minutes at the weekend against Aston Villa either. Yeah. I think, of course, we expect Haaland to start against Spurs. It's a big game. Pep's comments about Haaland being young and fresh are really, really good. But of course, the Champions League does start now. And that's not just the added fixture every week. That's the added travel every week. Mm. You know, having to get on an aeroplane, having to fly for 2-3 hours, the momentum that comes with the Champions League and all that energy and the lack of training around the Premier League fixture has to be taken into consideration. And sure, look, Salah's got the Champions League too, but we know he's completely used to this schedule, and he has been for a very, very long time. Now, at Dortmund, sure, Erling Haaland played Champions League football, but he also got to have a lot of rests when needed in the Bundesliga. And I don't quite know what we're going to see at City moving forward with his minutes. So sure, against Spurs, I expect him to start, but it's a tricky fixture. And Salah has Wolves. You just got to play the fixture for this one. So I think I'll be looking at Salah. And it does seem every week these are the only two guys we consider. And I do wonder if we need to be a little bit more experimental or a little bit more fun with our captaincy picks, knowing the likes of Tony, the likes of Mitrovic, even Jesus earlier in the season and Martinelli, we're not really giving them the armband or even considering them for the armband. But when you look at just out and out points, well, they've been matching these guys. You know, Tony has Southampton. In 2 weeks' time, Mitrovic plays Nottingham Forest. You know, Martinelli has an Everton coming up. There's fixtures there that you think, oh, could you think a little bit outside the box? But it takes so much courage to go away from Salah or Haaland, because we know not only the chances of them scoring big, they're there, but it's more when you look at your mini leagues and you know everyone, 99% of them have gone to one of those two players. If you don't go there, you can really get stung. So maybe just owning those other players is enough. But it seems like a very defensive mindset to think like that. But as FPL managers that worry about things like effective ownership and those percentages of when you look at how highly owned a player is, we do worry a little bit about that. I can see myself sticking with Salah or Haaland for a very long time, to be honest. You thinking the same?
Perfectly summarized. I don't think I need to add much here. I mean, the only difference is maybe there's a route to attack the weaker teams, right? The worst defensive teams in Nottingham Forest, Leicester, as well as Bournemouth off the top of my head. And at the same time, it's not like the teams that are playing those teams are the best. So I do think that Haaland and Salah should be the main focus in terms of captaincy for the time being.
Yeah, sounds good. Really enjoyed the last 45 minutes chatting, mate. We've covered so much, talking about those wildcard plans and looking at your third forward spot, and obviously considering teams like Newcastle and Brentford and looking at those Arsenal assets and what we do with them. So yeah, awesome chatting, mate. Really enjoyed it.
Johnny, it was a pleasure speaking with you. I've been a fan of you for a while now before I got into the content space. So I hope this is one of many pods we'll do together. For the listeners, don't forget the FPL pod will be back on Thursday with an in-depth preview of all the talking points ahead of Game Week 7. Good luck to you and your teams. Remember to enjoy FPL and listen to another Off the Bench podcast next week.